This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is episode 381, and I have a buddy that I need to say hey to. Just a second. So, Saturday. Dinner. Is it this Saturday? I think it's this Saturday. Sure. Okay. Jose Locos? Six. Okay, good. See ya. Okay. Okay. A little bit of housekeeping there. Anyway, so... So, episode 381. And, it's been a good week. Got a lot of things done. Had a big meeting this week on a project that I've been working on the design on for months now. We've got a lot of things going simultaneously. But this one, this is a big one. Oh, man. I estimated out the hours at like 9,500 hours. It's just huge. It's huge. It's going to be huge. But, you know, we talked our way through it. We're going to need a tool. We're going to need this business process management system for it. So, I think we figured out what we're going to buy there and blah, 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 blah. So, moving forward. Oh, Jesus help us. Anyways, so that's all going fine. We've got a little rain going on today, in case you can't hear it in the background. Unfortunately, you know, my wife has been doing fine all week with the rain, but apparently there's a pressure differential right now, so she called me a few minutes ago to say that her head was pounding. But maybe now that it's started raining, maybe that'll help a little bit. So we'll see. It's been a good week. I'm trying to think if I've gotten together with any buddies this week. I got together with a buddy on Saturday. Maybe that's it. Anyways, we had a really nice breakfast together. Getting together to chat with my godson next Tuesday. Yay, that's always fun. And next week, I think there's a Tuesday evening. Maybe there's a Thursday next week. I think so. I have a Thursday breakfast next week, and then a Saturday breakfast next week as well. So, yeah, it's going to be a good week. I always like getting together and talking with my friends. I do have kind of an odd... I have an odd thing that I'm contemplating doing. It was going to cost me $77, but now I think it's down to a dollar. It's down to a dollar to get started. So I think maybe I'm going to do it because it's a dollar. I came across, I'm always looking for stuff that will potentially help me understand better the interactions between men and women. And the things are that need to be thought about in these interactions between men and women. So I'm always trying to understand that better. A, because it just fascinates me. But B, because it helps me in my writing. Because I like to write believable characters, even if they are characters that would not necessarily do what I would do in a given situation. Nonetheless, I want to honor the character. And I want to believe that as that character has formed up in my mind, that there is the potential for that character to exist in the real world. I certainly have had some people tell me, I don't like that character. And then I said, well, but do you think that character could? Oh yeah, I know people like that. I just don't like the character. Okay, well that's fine. That's fine. Because I have a high regard for character, and I'm learning to be better at character. So that's a goal. So I'm always looking for things that can help me with that goal. Things that can give me more grist for the mill. Although I don't think I'm using that correctly. But anyways, I'm always looking for, you know, that. Well, I was on Facebook and there was this ad for Facebook. And, you know, it was like, how to be the man that all the women will want. And I'm like, oh, right. But what was interesting about this one is that it's actually a woman coach. Okay, that's kind of interesting. I mean, it's a woman coach who's using all of the same language that men coaches use when they try to sell. The woman will want to be with you. How to turn on desire in any woman. You know, and the whole focus is how to get women to have sex with you. And my contention is that if your whole focus is just how to get women to have sex with you, that's probably not good. Because you're in for a rude awakening. That may work in some short term, and then you may think you've got this all figured out, and you may get married, and, you know, then you're going to find out that all that stuff just works in the short term, and it's really better to just be in a real relationship as opposed to just hoping that you can marry a tool that you can have used to keep your sperm count low. So I was a little bit dismissive of what I saw, but I went ahead and clicked on it, and supposedly she was going to reveal the hidden secret. The hidden secret that will turn on any woman's desire for you. And I'm not going to give away her secret and stuff, but I got in the car one morning and put it on my phone and listened to it all the way in. It was like 30 minutes. 30 minutes. She didn't actually get to the secret until about, 15, 17 minutes in. It was 15 to 17 minutes. And then it was another 13 minutes of selling you on her program, and wouldn't it be great? Okay, so whatever. It's $77. But there's all this stuff that comes with it. And to me, I look at that stuff and say, okay, this is a woman who is actually talking about this. So how does she phrase it? How does she approach these issues? Because that will better tell me whether I'm on the right track in my characterizations. One of the things she said in her free stuff is that what men need to understand as they're approaching a woman to talk to that woman is men think they're more intimidated than the woman is, and that's absolutely not true. The woman is very intimidated anytime a man comes up to talk to her. Well, that fits within my system, so of course I liked that. I was like, well, yeah, that's what I think. Whenever you find somebody who actually agrees with you, then you give them more credence. So I was actually thinking about, it's $77. This might be good research. And one of the things you get with it for free is you get a one-week consultation with her. You know, she'll be your personal wing girl, you know, like a wingman except a girl, wing girl. Because I guess wing woman doesn't sound as good as wing girl. I don't know. to help you whenever you have questions about how to get the opposite sex to pay attention to you. Okay, well, I'm not really interested in that, but I got thinking, you know, it might be fun just to talk to her about my conceptualization on average in general of women and see how many times she goes, yep, or she goes, no, that's not right. Whether she would or not, but supposedly you get a free week of email consultation. So like up to 15 times you can write her per month. And I was thinking, you know, that might be that might be worth it just to try that. So I was thinking of all the questions I would ask and all that. And then I got another note from her today because I downloaded her free thing. Then now, of course, I'm getting the spam emails. So I got another thing from her today that was on such and such and such. And, oh, she was selling her consultation service. And so she was talking about how this is normally $99 a week or $99 a month. But for this limited time offer, you can get it for $1 for 1 week. And I was thinking, shoot, for $1, why not? So I've got to go home. I've got to talk to my wife about it. Because I really don't want her to be stumbling across something about me signed up for a program on how to get women to want to have sex with me. Because that would not be good. That would not be good. So I would rather talk to her about it ahead of time and tell her why I'm doing that. Instead of her stumbling across some email I will have gotten from winggirl.com. Anyways, what's interesting about this particular one is she is coming up from a female perspective, and she keeps saying, now, I'm just not giving out these things, you know, so that men can influence women and, you know, then treat those women badly because they're jerks. I really want to help all those guys out there who are just really struggling, but they're good guys. Okay. But if all you're stressing to these guys is that this will make women want you and this will make women, you know, fawn all over you and want to be the home one that takes you home at night. If all you're doing is just stressing, this is how you can get women how to have sex with you, I think you're stressing the wrong thing. I think what you need to be stressing is how to be in a relationship with a woman. But of course, that's not gonna sell. You can't, here, get my course to teach you how to be in a relationship with women and understand that sometimes it's gonna be frustrating and it's gonna take a lot of work and sometimes you're not gonna understand anything about what's going on and you should just do like you're told. That would sell really well. Anyway, so I've got to talk to my beloved about this, and I'm probably going to spend the $1 because it's a free trial for a week, and then it goes up to $99 a month, which, of course, I've done those types of things before, and I will be sure to cancel, unless I'm really getting some good benefit out of it in terms of conversation. So, I mean, honestly, I'd much rather talk on the phone than email because, ugh. I still, after all these years, I still don't like email. It's just too sterile. I just love talking to people. It's such an interactive environment. Anyways, I came across an article, last week? Week before last? This is an old article. It was written in 2010. But it's just fascinating. It's all about language. And do we think that maybe the languages that we speak actually influence the way we think? And it really seems like it would when they started getting into all the permutations here. I don't know that I have any big whoop-de-doo conclusion on this, but there were just some stuff in here that just fascinates me. And so the article was called Lost in Translation by Lera, L-E-R-A, Boroditsky. And growing up in the Philippines, there were some interesting tensions between Tagalog and English. For instance, in Tagalog, there were no genders. So it was not unusual for Filipinos to often confuse him, her, you know, us, well, him, her, his, hers. It was not unusual. So, you know, my dad might ask a student, well, but why, you're not supposed to be kissing the girls, you know, to a guy. Why did you kiss this girl? Oh, because I love him. Because him, her. You know, and so I kind of had some exposure to this fact that linguistically, if the language approaches certain things, that there can be some subtle shifts in how people relate to life, how they think about things. And this research is still ongoing. But I've seen enough things now that language, our abilities at language, are really a fascinating component to the human experience. Because I was watching one show years ago, and they were talking about the fact when a baby, a human baby, comes out of the womb, they are like wired for language, ready to go. And in fact, if there isn't language present, there can be certain mental facilities that do not develop correctly. So where if you have someone who's raised in a basement in an abusive situation, who's never spoken to, who's never allowed to speak, that there can come a point in the brain's development that it gets locked in and it can never after that grasp certain advanced concepts like grammar. It's never going to happen. That's all really interesting. That language development, or that brain development, when exposed to language, occurs in a different way and different structures are developed. And if you miss that opportunity, you can't get it back. Or at least, it's very difficult to get back. Maybe by now they've proved you can get it back. You never know. Knowledge is moving. So anyways, there was just a bunch of really interesting examples. And they were saying, if you take the nursery rhyme, Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall. Even that little snippet can be different from one language to another. They said in English, we have to mark the verb for tense. We say sat, we don't say sit, we don't say Humpty Dumpty sit on a wall. Is sitting, has been sitting, was sitting for a long time. We have all these ways of had thought about sitting. We have all these ways to describe those things. But in Indonesian, they said you don't really change the verb to mark tense. They said, in fact, you can't, which obviously would make things a lot easier. They said, in Russian, you have to mark tense for the verb, past, present, future, whatever, but also gender. So you would change the verb if Mrs. Dumpty did the sitting. You would also have to decide if the sitting event was completed or not. So if Mr. Dumpty sat on a wall for the entire time he was meant to, it would be different, a different form of word, verb, than say if he had a great fall before he completed. Or wait, if he had a great fall, because he wouldn't have completed. In Turkish, you would have to include the verb and how you acquired the information. So, if you saw Humpty Dumpty with your own eyes, you would use one form of the verb. But if you had simply read or heard about it, you would use a different form. So then the question becomes, if all of these different speakers of these different languages have these different ways of expressing these things, does that change how they view their experience? Are they thinking differently? There was an idea that, let's see, those questions touch on all the major controversies in the study of the mind, with important implications for politics, language, and yet very little empirical work has been done on these questions until recently. The idea that language might shape thought was for a long time considered untestable at best, and more often simply crazy or wrong. Now a flurry of new cognitive science research is showing that, in fact, language does profoundly affect the way we see the world. And then the article goes on to some really, really interesting examples. Okay, so the article goes on to say that the search for linguistics universals, so try to find some way to categorize all this kind of stuff and say, yeah, this is how languages are all similar, has yielded some interesting data on language, but after decades of work, not a single proposed universal has withstood scrutiny. Instead, as linguists probe deeper into the world's languages, 7,000 or so, only a fraction of them analyzed, innumerable, unpredictable differences have emerged. Now, this is where it starts getting interesting. So, for example, in Porampura, a remote Aboriginal community in Australia, the indigenous languages do not use terms like left and right. Instead, everything is talked about in terms of absolute cardinal directions. So, I went, what? I'm getting my mail, one moment. When I was reading this, I thought, good night. Instead, everything to absolute north, south, east, and west, which means you say things like, there's an ant on your southwest leg. I love this. To say hello, one asks, where are you going? And an appropriate response might be, a long way to the south, southwest. How about you? So in other words, if you don't know which way is which, you can't even say hello in this community. You can't get past a hello because you have to know what the absolute direction is where you're going or people won't understand you. The writer of the article went on to say about a third of the world's languages spoken in all kinds of physical environments rely on constant linguistic, rely on absolute directions for space. As a result, I'm backing into my garage. As a result of this constant linguistic training, speakers of such languages are remarkably good at staying oriented and keeping track of where they are even in unfamiliar landscapes. Well, this seems like this would be useful. Of course, we don't do it that way in English. They perform navigational feats scientists once thought were beyond human capabilities. This is a big difference, a fundamentally different way of conceptualizing space, trained by language. So they took some of these people, the writer of the article and her colleague, Alice Gabby, traveled to Australia. And they took a bunch of pictures that showed sequences in time. So a man at different ages, or a crocodile growing, or a banana being eaten. And they gave them to people, and they said, okay, arrange them in the order that they transpired. She said, when English speakers arrange time, they arrange it from left to right. Hebrew speakers tend to do it from right to left. On the other hand, the Porampurans arrange time from east to west. Didn't matter how they were sitting at a table, they arranged it from east to west. So if you faced them one direction, they would put the cards east to west. And if you put them like on the other side of the table, they'd still put the cards from east to west. Because everything was about the direction. They said, and you see other people in other languages, there's different ways things are organized. So in Mandarin, the future can be below and the past above. In Aymara, spoken in South America, the future is behind and the past is in front. Really interesting stuff. There are other such languages. I think Russian and Japanese, where agents of causality are not as well as defined. So you can show them what appears to be accidental breakages and things like this. And if there isn't clear intention, when you go back to interview them later and you say, well, who broke the vase? If there's not clear intention, it's much more likely that the English speaker is going to remember who accidentally broke the vase than, for instance, a Japanese speaker. Because in describing that event, it would be more like the vase was broken. So, yeah, pretty interesting. They talk about wardrobe malfunctions, blah, 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 blah. There are certain languages where colors have more descriptions. And when you have colors with more descriptions, people tend to see more colors in the spectrum than Americans might, or Americans might identify. So it's really, it's just so interesting. The person concludes the article by saying, language is a uniquely human gift. When we study language, we are uncovering in part what makes us human, getting a peek at the very nature of human nature. As we uncover how languages and their speakers differ from each other, we discover that human natures too can differ dramatically depending on the languages we speak. The next steps are to understand mechanisms through which languages help us construct the incredibly complex knowledge systems that we have. Understanding how knowledge is built will allow us to create ideas that go beyond the currently thinkable. This research cuts right to the fundamental questions we all ask about ourselves. How do we come to be the way we are? Why do we think the way we do? An important part of the answer, it turns out, is the languages that we speak. That's very interesting. So, you know, then the question becomes, okay, where did language come from then? Was it something that just arose and evolved all of its own? Were we designed to create language? How did it get here? And you know, I don't necessarily have much skin in the game one way or another, whether we were designed to create language, and so we create language. And whatever the concepts were of the person who was building that language, whatever quirks they had of them or the group, that becomes the thing that they build the language around, and that becomes the thing that then further reinforces their ideas. I don't know, but it's really interesting to me. And it's really interesting, the idea that if we can't find a way to put what we're thinking about into a language, how do we actually think about things? Certainly we can have pictures and we can examine pictures, but you know, I find that when I'm thinking about things, there is pictures in my brain, but language is such a huge part of all of that. So I don't know, it's really interesting. And again, I think it's one of those things that it is the glory of God to hide a thing and the glory of kings to seek it out. And it's just so fun to have things like this that we can search after and think about and try to find answers for, even though some of those answers might be getting clouded from our own preconceptions. It's cool. It's just really cool. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.